Anybody have any questions relevant to the midterm?
So it's going to be open notes or closed notes?
Closed notes.
Oh, we have to
wait. I want to see if you can remember some stuff.
That's both a blessing and a curse. If it's closed notes, then some questions can be easier. The curse is that you have to remember some stuff.
So it's going to be like questions like, so the Greeks had this idea of math, and Egyptians have this idea of math, and concepts.
Think about what did we emphasize in class, you know? Right, what did we talk about? There were differences between Greek and Egyptian and Babylonian arithmetic, how they did arithmetic, differences in what kinds of math they actually did, who did lots of proofs, who didn't, who had place value, who didn't, right? That's that's both conceptual and computational. So, I could ask, simply like multiple choice or true false questions, just do you remember the basic things, then I could ask for you to maybe solve some problem in a Greek or Egyptian style. As long as it's not something too different than what we've already done, it should be reasonable for you to be able to remember some of the techniques and be able to even get on a test. Or I could ask you to give some kind of short answer, a few sentences to describe the differences between such and such, or describe the similarities between such and such. You could either be comparing two different ancient mathematics cultures, or you could be comparing something ancient with something modern. The final exam will be comprehensive, but I wanted to have a good lag between what we'd studied and what was on the midterm. So midterm only, the first four chapters. So regarding the medieval Islamic mathematics, in the empires ruled by the Muslims in medieval times, their mathematics, had practical aspects. You have engineering, right? You know, you make stuff of certain shapes. And then, of course, the big one is astronomy. And and of course, there's also purely intellectual interest. The intellectual interest is in... So they had access to things like Euclid's Elements. So they would reflect on them and extend them, right? Comments on the results.
Yes. I should probably put that in.
Extending and commenting on. So you would see Greek methods in the mix and what they would do. You would also see other influences from Indian mathematics, for example. One example of this, both the Indians and the Islamic mathematics, you would see this kind of approximation used. They had lots of trigonometry tables, right? These techniques, similar to the Indian techniques, but they developed their own new techniques for getting approximate sines and cosines. And the interesting thing, they introduced the cosecant, the cotangent, secant, and tangent. This would be about in the 'The tangent goes back to China by about. I think 700, definitely by the 700s.
Thank you.
Now, they would think of things, remember with the trig stuff, they would think of things
not in terms of just a ratio. Remember the reading. The book denotes it like this to indicate the difference. And likewise for the other five trig functions, right? Here's a nice little thing to try. If we make
a circle with a radius and an angle, this is the sine of theta, it's the cosine of theta, this is the radius r,
what about these other four functions? Can you make line segments with the appropriate lengths? I mean, we've probably all seen this picture a lot. You know, you have a circle, you make an angle with two radii, then you make a right triangle. This is and you have, we think it was r cosine theta, r sine theta. Right? But what line segment corresponds to tangent? Give an actual physical interpretation to tangent, right? An actual length. We think of it as a ratio of sine to cosine. But what does it mean in terms of an actual length with an actual circle, an actual angle? If you want to recover that kind of thinking, we think of it like this. There's not really going to be any distinction, okay? Right? Because when it's a ratio, the fact that you have those r's in there doesn't really matter. Okay. They cancel out. So we don't have to worry about that issue. Our tangent is the same as their tangent. The radius is relevant.
that right?
No, I'm pretty sure.
No, that's not quite right. I wrote that. Trying to get an actual line. Like this. Okay. You want to keep it. You want to keep it differently. Let's say this. There we go. This is the key. I have to keep the R in there so it'll be an actual length. Now, see, I have two ratios. So the idea is similar triangles. Okay. So on the one hand, you have a right triangle here with your cosine theta and your sine theta. So the idea is, okay, make a bigger triangle and the base is all the way out to R, right? Now, this is R cosine theta. You go the way all out to here, you have R. But make a similar triangle. So the same angle right there. Okay. So since these ratios match, that's the interpretation. Thus, so in terms of our picture here, we can go up to R this way. So there's your tangent theta. What else? What about the other ones? Okay. Cotangent, for example. Cotangent is the other way around. It's cosine and sine. Okay. So you want to have different thought here. So now, here what we do, we took the cosine and we blew it up to R, right? We're getting a similar triangle that blew up the sine and tangent. Okay. Now, in this case, if you want to do it differently, you would want to extend in this direction. Right? So you'd want to make this leg longer. Say this is the R. Here's the sine of theta. But what if we go further and make a copy of R? And we go further out here too. there's one interpretation of your cotangent.
So you can imagine
take this inside my picture here, it'd be like if I took this radius here and then I swung it around so it was hanging straight down.
I just extending the
sine gets blown up to r, cosine gets blown up to cotangent. Yeah, sorry about that. This one has another interpretation. Okay, so that. There's another side to this triangle as well, right? We've gone all the way up, all along this one, right? What is this thing here? And here is R. The cosine got blown to R, sine got blown to tangent.
We think of cosecant as reciprocal of sine, secant as reciprocal of cosine.
So they would think in terms of ratios of lengths, right? So, for example, let's talk about cosecant first. Okay? So we have that ratio. Cosecant is the other way around. Now, if you had this, they would think of that as multiplied by, they were interested in something like this. That's put this all in one. Okay. So here, right here, we have their capital cosecant divided by R is equal to R divided by sine. Okay? So in our picture, where's the right picture? So if you have a sine of theta and you blow it up into an R, then your R should blow up into a cosecant. So that's what you get here. It's just similar triangles. Okay. See, in this picture, this is where we blew up the sine into an R, the capital sine into an R, so the the opposite thing here, the R has to go up into a cosecant. So that still leaves the question, what about this one? Well, this one is just going to be the secant. But it's the other one. And this right here, the secant right here. Right? The way that works, it's the same kind of argument, except instead of a sine, I go from cosine. R over capital cosine theta equals the reciprocal lowercase cosine theta, right? It's just that fraction here upside down, which is what we call the secant. And but in terms of medieval mathematics, this would be thought of as they would think in terms of ratios of lengths. They would think about things this way. Okay? So here's the situation now. So here, in this picture, the cosine gets blown up to an R. Okay? So if you blow up your cosine into an R, then the corresponding blow up of the R, the hypotenuse of the small triangle, should be the hypotenuse of the bigger triangle. And it should be the secant, because of the ratio. So if we put all this together, picture,
we have
physical interpretations in terms of lengths of all six of the trig functions. Really, you have the angle I want. You have a line and another line of equal length. Those are about the same. Then we make our perpendicular. Another perpendicular at the end of this segment, and we extend. There. And then the other way we extend is this way. So now in this picture, we can capture it all. So we have sine of theta right here. And this is going to get pretty crowded, isn't it? Maybe I should just use points. Thank you. So from C to E is R, same as C to F, same as F to B. R's. Sine theta is F to D, capital sine of theta. Cosine of theta is this one here, C to D, tangent of theta, that's this big one here from E to G. And then the cotangent. Our secant is crowded, but from cosecant would be that one from F to A.
So they would interpret everything in terms of these actual lengths.
Questions or comments about this?
I rarely see anything beyond the interpretations of sine, cosine, and tangent. I do see these three in my teaching, especially like in calculus, you know, or in advanced calculus. If you ever actually want to prove the derivative of sine is cosine from the geometric definition of sine and cosine, you end up thinking about this triangle here, and there's this inequality where you have sine of theta, or really capital sine of theta, and then here you have arc length r of theta, right? And then here you have capital tangent theta, and the idea is that this is shorter than the arc length, and then arc length is shorter than the tangent. But even that takes some arguing. I just about never see, you know, the length interpretation, you know, r times lowercase c of theta in terms of that. But it is nice to be aware, I think, of the tangent and secant ones, because it gives you an additional understanding of how tangent and secant blow up at 90 degrees. I mean, we all know, okay, you divide by cosine, and abstractly, okay, well, as you get to 90 degrees, the cosine goes to zero. So if you're dividing by cosine, whether it's
1 divided by cosine if you're doing a secant, or sine divided by cosine if you're doing a tangent. You see, oh yeah, as you get to 90 degrees, tangent and secant blow up. But I think it's nice to also have in your mind this kind of this geometric reason. You can see that as this angle theta gets close to 90 degrees, the tangent, right? I mean, what's going to happen, you know, as this side has to get steeper and steeper, your triangle's going to have to get taller and taller, right, before this vertical line finally meets that steeper and steeper line. So your tangent times r is going to get really long, and your secant times r is going to get really long, too. Cotangent and cosecant, I mean, you can almost always avoid using them, so they're not as important. But if they ever come up, you can have a similar bit of reasoning. If you imagine a very small angle, so a little angle phi there. Now imagine you have to blow up that capital sign V there to an actual copy of this R here, right? Okay. Now you have to bring, now you make a right angle here. You have to go way out. So if the angle's small, then you can say, okay. My cosecant and my cotangent are going to get big if phi is small. Which it gives some geometric interpretation to the algebraic version of it, where, we're dividing by sine. If theta is near zero, sine of theta is near zero. So we're going to get a big fraction. Or here, again, dividing by sine of theta. Theta is small, sine of theta is small. Reciprocal, that would be big. Ancient and medieval mathematics, since their thinking of ratios was in terms of ratios of actual physically interpretable things like lengths or volumes or areas or discrete quantities like natural numbers, 17 to 4, because you can actually have 17 of something or 4 of something. So their reasoning, especially in geometry, therefore relies a lot more on the similar triangles. How do I think about things? Now by circa say 1000, you have the obvious things, right? But not just this one, but the other ones, right? Which you may remember these if you had to do some trig substitutions in calculus too. These would actually come up.
if you, the way I would think about my in terms is take this and in R, that's to capitalize, so I better make it R squared. Divide this through by a, the cosine squares. And this is just, you know, Pythagorean formula, you know. That's old news. But then of course there'd be natural counterparts, right? To these. So you would think of these. You could also take this and so this is the triangle you have with so here's tangent, R, secant. The other one you could have is cotangent, R, and cosecant. So what's interesting is that they actually considered, let's consider the ratios where we divide through by R squared on these. So you start at the... one... If I try and match, you know, their thinking, it would look, they'd be thinking of it like this. So these would be ratios. Since they're squared things, if you think of them as ratios of areas. Okay. And this, you could also, remember this could be turned around, right? So that's a reciprocal there. So the, so I mean this is old news, but the, I guess, you know, this is the thing that
that's the kind of innovation there, right?
These ones are just right triangles. So they were considering these.
Now, of course, in our modern way of thinking about it, we think of, you know, of course, for us it's like this. I just about never use this one.
This rarely comes up. When it does come up, it's because I'm trying to do a trig substitution for some integral.
I don't do surveying or something, so I don't know if the
secant comes up. But I mean, I think it's pretty telling that you're not going to find, you never find a secant button on a calculator. You know, we just take the reciprocal of cosine. Now, as far as these things go, I was just mentioning. Oh, right. What's the date on this one?
Okay. Also, by the 1000s, we see the law of sines.
What's the law of sines?
Sine of A over A, sine of B over B, mm-hmm. Sine of C over C.
Yeah. For any two triangles, any triangle, and another marker.
So yes, for us, you know, we think of it, you know, any triangle, okay, alpha, beta, gamma, A, B, C. Probably thinking like this, right? The ratio of the sine of an angle to the opposite side is a constant. It doesn't matter which angle you pick. You pick any angle, take its sine, divide by the length of the opposite side, you get some number, and it's the same number for all three of the angles.
Okay. Now, notice that if you take this and you multiply both sides by B, divide both sides by the sine of alpha, you get an equivalent form. Okay? Okay? So, and that if we were using capital signs, right, the factor of radius r would cancel out. Okay. So the medieval Asdomic version is that for any two sides. There was nothing special about A and B there. I could have done the same argument for B and C, right? Or I could have done the same argument for A and C, right? So for any two sides, their ratio equals the ratio of the sines, right, of the opposite of their opposite angles. Okay. That's how they would think about it. Right, you'd have this for B and for A. And you would have if instead of A and B I had picked, you know, C and B, right? Yeah, I could have rewritten that equation like this. I could have used the fact that sine of alpha over A is equal to sine of gamma over C, and I could have written I could have rearranged it to get this. So they're equivalent, right? Just different ways of thinking about it. And of course, as long as they're using the same, you know, base radius when they compute their capital signs, you know, when you do the ratio, that base radius will cancel out. So of course,
they would have been aware of that. You know,
they would have known, oh, it doesn't matter what my base radius is in my table of signs if I'm just taking the ratios here, because it'll cancel out.
So by the 11th century, you've got a lot of our, all six of our trig functions have made their appearance on the stage. And we have lots of trig tables, Indian and Islamic medieval mathematics. Lots of estimates, lots of numerical estimates. We're getting most of the basic relations between the trig functions. Also are seeing other continuations, extensions of the Greek work. So remember the method of exhaustion? It's basically a precursor to what we do in calculus, where we slice something up into a bunch of little pieces, approximate them, the little pieces, by simpler little things. Right, take a limit, basically. So one of the things that was done was considering, you know, a parabola, and you rotate it, the rotation of a parabola. Kind of, what's the volume, right? Calculus too, you know, rotate it around, slice it up, use the disk method, as they call it, or the washer method, and do the integral, right? It's basic, and that disk method or washer method did pretty much the same thing, following the Greek tradition. imagine we have some height H here. Okay, so we're going to consider this much. Arc here. I'll call this length K. Well, I should call it, let's call it capital R. I mean, it is a radius. It's just not going to be the, there's going to be other radii. And since it's a parabola, if you have a shorter little h here and a little r there, right, you have ratio, right? That's what we would think about. So you imagine going all the way back to Archimedes on this example, cut up into n parts. So you have a little piece. It's just going to be the whole big height, right, times divided into n equal parts times I, right? And you have this relationship here. There's the thickness of the piece. Okay? Which will just be h over n. Okay. So together, right? And you would have, you can imagine making a little cylinder. This. Okay. Now over here you have solve this for RI. Right? So you have pi R squared. Right? You'll have R squared. I should just write it. You have division by h, so that's going to cancel out the h right there. And you have the hi. Track of everything. Pi r squared goes hi to the fourth power. You'll have h squared squared in the denominator, then times an h, and then there you have h cubed. And this, so you have all this. But then, you know, we have a simple formula for these heights. Okay. Pi r squared. Now you have I to the fourth, h to the fourth, n to the fourth. Simplification, you get pi r squared h over n to the fifth times I to the fourth. Now, if you think back to how we did things with the Archimedean spiral, the idea was you could sum from I equals 0 to n minus 1, and you get an underestimate. And sum from I equals 1 to n and get an overestimate. So this similar idea, which of course the Islamic mathematicians that read of Archimedes and so on were well aware of, they understand that same thing could apply here. Right? So on the one hand, you could go like this. Supposed to be going up in steps of constant height towards the end. Right, so you have like that. So you have at your underestimate. Or you could have gone like this. To get bigger radii. So the actual volume is in between. And so if you knew, like the medieval mathematicians in the Islamic empires, and also, for that matter, in India, China, Europe, knew that they learned these formulas for summing of powers, summing of squares, summing of cubes, sums of fourths, the ones for, like, say, sums of squares and so on. That goes all the way back to ancient Greece. The higher powers, fourths came later. So the point is, what are these two things? This one is actually, at zero you have nothing, right? So it's really the same as if you started at one, just didn't go quite as far, right? So on the one hand, you have this constant factor. And then you have a sum from 1 to n minus 1 of fourth powers. The first n minus 1 fourth powers. Here you have the same thing, but you're adding up the first n fourth powers. Okay? And what's the difference between these two things? Well, let's see, it's just the last term, the n to the fourth, but you divide by an n to the fifth. Of course, that goes to zero as n goes to infinity, right? In our modern way of speaking. So for n large, the difference gets smaller and smaller. So just as the ancient Greeks thought, for any magnitude, we could make an n large enough such the error is smaller than that magnitude. Okay. So then you just need a formula. So all you need to know then is that the sum up to, say, any k of the fourth powers, you just need to know that it's equal to the fifth power of where you stopped. So the first k fourth powers add up to k to the fifth over 5 plus, some lower order terms, that you don't care about. So that means that in our case, when we divide through by the n to the fifth there, we're just going to get this. Plus a bunch of junk we don't care about, but it'll go away in the winter, right? There's also some stuff that I could have talked about with spherical trigonometry, but yeah, we're out of time. And if you're really interested in astronomy or how you do computations for precise mapping of the globe, you should learn more about spherical trigonometry. But I can't point you to any class that teaches it at this university. But it was known way back when. It goes as far back as ancient Greece. You know, they cared about this stuff because they cared about astronomy. So if you're interested in it, you know, read about it.